It's good to be prepared, or is it? Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today, as usual, is my co-host, the Vice Chairman of our Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Sitting here a little perplexed about what I'm seeing, trying to figure out exactly what's going on, but I'm sure by the end of the show or end of however many shows we do on this, we'll have it worked out.
Well, I hope so. What we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen, and it's interesting we're here on Monday because just last Friday, while everybody else in the greater landscape of America were either watching basketball games or preparing their green beverages for the Saturday St. Patrick's Day celebrations, the President of the United States will be on munching hot dogs with Prime Minister David Cameron in Dayton, Ohio, watching one of those basketball games, was issuing an executive order. It came out on Friday afternoon, very late for the news cycle, obviously, and I think there was a reason for that. A new executive order from the office of the White House, and this one was done, like I said, on Friday the 16th, and it is called the National Defense Resources Preparedness Order. That's a big sounding name, isn't it, Chuck? National Defense Resources Preparedness. Makes you kind of feel good about the country, doesn't it?
Well, I'm always worried when things are put in terms of national defense, or I have never liked the name Homeland Security. It smacks a little too much to me of talking about the fatherland and all that kind of business, and I think we know where that all went.
Yes, for anybody who's a student of history, I think we were pretty clear where that all went. But Chuck, this executive order, which honestly, by the way, is a fairly long little beast. I'm scrolling down through here, and I think it would probably print out 8 or 9 pages of documentation here on this executive order. It doesn't have a number yet. I thought that was a little strange because usually executive orders come out with numbers. But I've noticed that since about December of last year, the Obama administration, when putting forth these executive orders, don't even bother to number them anymore. And Chuck and I are not so familiar with the nuances of the federal bureaucracy that we know whether or not this is standard procedure and they just catch up with the numbering later, or if for some reason at the end of last year they just decide in order to keep people guessing, they wouldn't give them numbers anymore. But if this one did have a number, according to what I found from the president's press office website, this would probably end up being Executive Order 13,603, I think is what we came up with. But this order, according to some commentators over the weekend, they're looking at and saying, well, this is very similar to something Bill Clinton did in 1994. Well, that also gives me pause, Charles, that if this thing hasn't been resuscitated since Bill Clinton put an executive order out there, maybe there was a reason why other presidents didn't add this into their repertoire of orders to the executive branch agencies.
From my reading of the article, though, it says George W. Bush issued something very similar as well.
Oh, okay. So maybe there was one other.
Neither of which, honestly, make me feel particularly comfortable.
No, not at all. It's interesting.
Considering that we got the Patriot Act under George W. Bush, I'm not singing the praises of his particular love for individual liberty.
No doubt. Well, you see, President Obama puts his authority to do this both under the Constitution, and we can talk about that here in a little bit, and also the laws of the United States, including, and he spells it out, the Defense Production Act of 1950 as amended. Well, the Defense Production Act, Chuck, was a law enacted September the 8th, 1950, in response to the start of the Korean War. Basically, it was an idea that had 3 sections to it. This act basically says the president could require businesses to sign contracts or fulfill orders deemed necessary for national defense. In other words, things like the auto industry, manufacturing jeeps and tanks, the munitions industries in the country, making sure that they're providing enough shells and cartridges and things of that nature for the war effort. Those were all part of that. The second thing the act did was authorizing the president to requisition property, force industry to expand production and the supply of basic resources, impose wage and price controls, settle labor disputes, control consumer and real estate credit, establish contractual priorities, and allocate raw materials to the AHA, the National Defense. That sounds fairly broad now, doesn't it, Charles?
That sounds way broad.
But remember, this was in 1950, and there was an actual war on, the Korean War, which was actually not a war. It was a police action, but that's the way that goes.
It was our first contract war for the United Nations.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds strange, but of course it was undeclared by Congress, and it was a matter of agreement through executive departments rather than a declared war through Congress, although Congress, for some unknown reason, fell in line and played the game, probably due to the UN treaty. I'm a little taken aback by some of the language. It sounds to me like the federal government can mandate that industries produce war goods.
Uh-huh, that's right.
That rather than going to them and soliciting bids for contract, they can go to them and say, we are commandeering your apparatus in order to run our war machine.
It's like, this is the buggy factory, you will be making bombs. That's exactly what this does, Chuck. As a matter of fact, Harry Truman in 1950, under the authority of the Act, established the Office of Defense Mobilization. He instituted wage and price controls. He regulated production in industries such as steel and mining. And basically did everything that we were concerned that they would be doing with this issue, which is basically commandeering the economy. Again, in 1950, we had a smaller economy, and that probably was done in a sense where everybody in the country understood that we were fighting a conflict. And if people want to say that, well, Barack Obama was only doing this under this authorization, I think we need to read this executive order much more closely, because there are some things in here, Chuck, that have me very concerned. I have not had the opportunity to go back and really read the Bill Clinton era executive order, but I'm fairly confident that there are certain catchwords and phrases in this one that you're not going to find in the older document, including such things in the policy section. Section 102 of this new executive order, it says that the U.S. must have an industrial and technological base capable of meeting national defense requirements and capable of contributing to the technological superiority of its national defense equipment in peacetime and in times of national emergency. And basically that the domestic industrial and technological base, now guys, by that we mean all manufacturing and all high technology, so all the companies in the country, is the foundation for national defense preparedness. The authorities provided in the Act shall be used to strengthen the base and to ensure it is capable of responding to the national defense needs of the United States. Charles, what does that sound like to you?
This is fascism basically come home to roost. It is the commandeering of the entire industrial base of the country. No longer is it a matter of choice whether you decide to produce war goods or not. It is a matter of diktat. The government is going to tell you that you're going to produce, and they will tell you what to produce and what kind of numbers to produce. In the finest fascist tradition, they will tell you how many people you have to hire, and they will probably force you to take on cronies and favorites to run certain departments in order to make sure that you are complying with the wishes of the federal government.
Now, are you reading ahead? Because that's exactly, if you read Section 103, the general functions under this executive order, that's what you get. Executive department and agencies responsible for plans and programs shall do all of these things, which is, first of all, to identify requirements for the full spectrum of emergencies. Now, that full spectrum of emergencies scares me, Chuck. What are they going to determine as an emergency?
Yeah, it could mean anything.
It could mean anything.
The president has a hangnail. The president gets sunstroke.
It says, including essential military and civilian demand. Now, Chuck, and you brought this up, one of the things that they shall do, one of the functions under this new provision, is to evaluate the availability of the most critical resources and production sources, including subcontractors and suppliers, skilled labor, and professional and technical personnel. In other words, they're going to tell you who you can and can't use.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what that gets down to.
I'm going to be honest. I did not read ahead, so that was speculation on my part. I'm glad to see that my radar is still good. What I'm sad to see is that my radar is still good.
Especially in this one. And then the other thing they're going to do, and this is where fascism reigns supreme, I think, in this one. They are tasked with improving the efficiency and responsiveness of the domestic industrial base to support national defense requirements. In other words, the government is going to come in and improve efficiency and responsiveness. Now, How many times have we seen that work?
This is a real oxymoron. We're really expecting the federal government to come in, put a yoke of government bureaucracy around the neck of a corporation and expect it to become more efficient in return. Wow. This is sort of like putting a governor on a Volkswagen engine and expecting it to go 100 miles an hour. And by a Volkswagen, I mean an old-time Beetle, which is what I had. They wouldn't do 100 miles an hour. You were lucky. If you got going downhill with a wind at your back, you might make 70, maybe 75 on a really steep hill. What you're doing is taking your Ferrari and governing the engine down to about 50 horsepower. You're going to end up with an interesting-looking machine that does nothing.
I only wish it would do nothing, Chuck, because
with
this one, they're going to make sure the implementation works, because the National Security Council, the Homeland Security Council, and the National Economic Council are the integrated policymaking forum for formulating national defense resource preparedness policy. And they basically are going to be handling all the coordination and plans, et cetera. And it goes down through here, and each office gets a certain roles. The Secretary of Homeland Security has a number of roles that they've got. The Defense Production Act Committee, so brand new committee formed, that basically goes and works, advises the president through, and I get this, the assistant to the president and national security advisor, assistant to the president for homeland security and counterterrorism, and assistant to the president for economic policy. Assistant to the president, Chuck, isn't he calling them czars?
Yes, you beat me to it. Was about to say, these sound exactly like czars.
These are the czars. So basically, everything's coming through the czars to the president. And then we basically, now I think it's very interesting because the Secretary of Commerce, which is a cabinet-level agency, in cooperation with the Secretary of Defense, which is another cabinet-level agency, and the Secretary of Homeland Security, another cabinet-level agency, so this is what they have to do under this. They'll analyze potential effects of national emergencies on actual production capability, taking into account the entire production system, including shortages of resources, and develop recommended preparedness measures to strengthen capabilities for production increases in national emergencies. Now, that sounds okay. That's just saying, hey, if we've got a war comes up or we have a high demand for this, they're going to make sure that we've got things coordinated so we're getting the resources to the companies that can put them together. That's not a problem.
Yeah.
Except then we get to this. Perform industry analyses to assess capabilities of the industrial base to support the national defense, and develop policy recommendations to improve the international competitiveness of specific domestic industries and their abilities to meet national defense program needs. International competitiveness?
Yeah,
so are
exactly.
They saying that if they can't meet up, they're going to farm our national defense out to international companies?
And that's exactly what it means, which is one of the most frightening things I can imagine, which basically means the Chinese could very easily have access to things like electronic equipment that, okay, let's talk about this for a minute. The United States of America has been losing industrial capacity for years. The only thing left that we manufacture here are things like cars. We do almost no electronic manufacturing here anymore, except for, you know, small scale things. We do no heavy industrial manufacturing here. We make a few airplanes, but those factories are kind of, they're being used right now, and there aren't that many of them anymore. A lot of our car manufacturing has been, you know, meted out to foreign countries. A lot of our things like raw material production and converting it for use into any manufacturing material has been parceled out to other countries. Barry, if we get into a situation where we have to become the quote-unquote arsenal of democracy, as in World War II, we're in deep trouble. We're in very deep trouble.
Yes.
Because we just don't have the capacity, and we don't have the ability. I mean, you really think we're going to be able to get some of these mothballed factories that have been for sale now for 25 years back up and running? I mean, have you seen some of the pictures out of, for instance, Detroit? Those places are going to have to be torn down and completely rebuilt. You're talking, looking at 18 months.
You know, Chuck, that's fine. And I wish this executive order only extended to that extent.
Yes, exactly.
This thing, ladies and gentlemen, and I've got to say, you know, go to the White House's website and read it for yourself.
Yeah, you're going to have to because we're out of time.
It's in the press office subsection, and it's Executive Order, National Defense Resources Preparedness. Okay, well, we need to come back tomorrow because we need to talk about Section 201, which honestly is where a lot of
Barry,
damage is going to occur.
I'll link it up so that people can find it from our front page at principledpolicy.com. Join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.